Accession number 20459, reel 14.
Captain Spencer, reel 14. I think you were saying that you had one successful operation that you can remember at that time.
Well, as I say, that stopping the Germans at that particular time, but
yes,
the success I remember, we were virtually into the main group, and they had not the unit I were, but they had a couple of landmines. And we were expecting, again, we were in a well-prepared position from a considerable height, rather like the other occasion. The landmines had been fairly reasonably secured in a sort of a gravelly road. So we let the first very small body, I think about 25 troops, go by, as they couldn't approach us, they were scaling up the road. And then the scout car came along, and it was blown up by the landmine. And we still had the front troops in view, but there was a very considerable army, you know, several hundred coming up, because apparently they're making a big move into the partisans area. So we shot, by that time, my rifle, I think I had one bullet left, which I shot up this time and abandoned with great, or gave the thing to so-and-so, who they abandoned it as well, the rifle. However, also some other German prisoners, somebody had taken some German prisoners, and they were taken up to a high bit of ground. And they were being, I think there were three of them, they were being questioned there. But I don't know whether I've mentioned this before about the prisoners now, but there's no way, obviously, that prisoners can be held or taken or escorted or anywhere. So they're going to be shot anyway. And I was in a group sitting not so far away, and I could see what was happening, rather what was saying. And one of the partisans put a revolver to one of the people's head, and I was saying, you know, will you talk or say what it is? They wouldn't say anything. So he pulled the trigger, but turned the revolver up, so he shot off most of his ear, and then put his revolver to again, and you could see the bloke talking non-stop then. But what information, and they did virtually the same thing to the other. Then the bloke was shot anyway. One bloke just wouldn't talk at all, but the other fellow was obviously what information they gave, I don't know, but I mean, it was you have to understand that they were going to be shot anyway, and therefore any information that they could gain obviously is great value to them.
What sort of German troops were they? How were they dressed and equipped?
Extremely well, the good uniforms, clean, extremely, yes, polished stuff. Yeah, they always look in tip-top condition.
Did you see what badges they were wearing?
No, I didn't. I couldn't recognize. It was a regimental, what's the name, but I couldn't actually.
I mean, were these army troops? Were they ordinary Wehrmacht, or were they SS?
No, not. I was taken prisoner by the, not interrogated by the SS, but no, these were ordinary.
These were ordinary Wehrmacht.
Yeah. But shortly after this, the Germans were obviously arriving in strength, and they got mortars set up, and virtually, the partisans dispersed very rapidly up into the hills. We then travel for, I travel with two or three people. And we are obviously now right in the heart of the parsonage group. There are hundreds of them. While walking into this particular area by myself, there was somebody slaughtering a cow. And there are a lot of people about. There are, again, a couple of vehicles in this particular area. I find my way to a command post where there's several Wallaces and what's-name and people, obviously well-dressed partisans in their own form of uniform or that sort. And I'm sitting in this, really what is a small corridor on an upturned case. And in walks an immaculately dressed cavalry officer in riding breeches, polished brown boots, SD hat, a little scarf around his neck. And he walks past me, and I just don't believe this. I mean, travel the hundreds of miles to find a British officer. And there he is, suddenly. Then he comes back. I said, have you got a cigarette? He looked at me rather strangely. He seemed a little reluctant for a moment to give me, but he did produce a silver cigarette case and gave me a cigarette. And he said, you speak very good English. And I said, I bloody well should do. I've been looking for you for bloody 500 miles or whatever it is. He said, oh, well, yeah. I said, yes, I'm so forth and so on. I can't unfortunately remember but that I was commissioned into the 65th Queen's Lancers, and he was a cavalry officer. So
yes.
I can't remember which one it was, actually, now, unfortunately. And he said, oh, my God, you know, come on, you poor bastard. Because, I mean, my shoes are wrapped round with cloth because they're all split, and I'm, you know, a little verminous as well, probably by that time. Oh, yeah, just come with me. So we go out somewhere, and there's a tin hut, rather like a Nissen hut, with a stove in it. And oh my Christ, I can't wait to take off. You know, we'll find you with some shoes and this, that, and the other. So I strip off my clothes. He'd got some clothes. Oh, apart from my long johns, which probably wouldn't strip off, because I haven't had a bath or wash for a bloody month. And I sit down to there's a sergeant there.
British sergeant.
A British sergeant.
In uniform.
In uniform. Mm. Who is the radio operator. Mm. And he... So we'll get you some food. So I have a sort of a bully beef hash stew, which was absolutely really strong tea, plenty of sugar in it. I can't remember whether they had a drink there or not. I don't think so. Anyway, so that was a most marvellous evening. I thought, that's all this time in the city. You know, oh yes, we'll find you a way. You know, we can get you further south and so forth and so on. I said, don't want to move from here, thank you. This is too bloody comfortable. So I try on a pair of boots and discard a lot of my stuff. I still keep my cloak, which is wrapped up with. But at about 4 o'clock in the morning, the Germans raid the place.
What, the Germans put in a formal attack?
Put in a formal attack on this very secure area. And of course, you know, everybody's panic is going, so we have to leave everything. Everybody just arrived that line. Have to leave everything.
Had you got a weapon? Had they given you
a weapon? No, I hadn't got a weapon.
But were you wearing British uniform?
No, I was still in my. I put the. I think I got. What had I got? I got a shirt from them, I think.
Yes.
So So, which was, that's two shirts. I'd already got an army shirt on, so I had two army shirts. I can't remember getting any other clothes from them at all.
What about boots? Had they given you any?
Well, the boots I'd got.
Yes.
But, and I put those on, and we slid down a mountainside, falling most of the time, as far as I can remember this, I know. And they knew roughly where to go. I'm not quite sure whether there was not another, there was somebody else with us. And we got to a farmhouse where we stopped. And I can't remember what distance. We must have travelled some distance to have got away from where the armies were. I can't remember staring anywhere else but at this farmhouse. And they'd got, the fellow got the radio with him. And they got a message out to that, giving my name, and rang. And my parents got a message to say that that I'd been located. So up to that time, I was just missing. And at this farmhouse, I opened a window and said to my, I'm glad you've got this message. But she had this dream that I'd opened a window and said this to her. So she had that before she got the telegram or from the War Office, or letter from the War Office saying we had located. Anyway, I still was determined to make further progress. And he'd found out another courier group that were travelling to near Ljubljana,
yes.
Cesna, I think it was. And so I decided that I would still make progress that way. Unfortunately, my boots were impossible, although they were strong and dry and what's name, so I had to slit both sides of them.
Well, they were just too small for you?
They were too small for them. They just hurt my feet too. My feet weren't in very good condition anyway. I mean, they were a degree of frostbite.
Were these the traditional British ankle boots?
Yes, with studs in the bottom.
So yes, proper ammunition boots.
Ammunition boots, correct. So I joined this group, and again the same courier basis, and heavy snow. And with them was a wounded partisan woman, Maria, who was an absolutely splendid girl. And so we start off on this trek, and we go with the group, you know, to the next one, and then on to the next. But because they're pretty well organized, on the odd occasion we actually stopped at one secure house waiting for the next process to be done, which was virtually done daily or every other day.
Sounds like a relay system.
A relay system. But we were kept being told that, don't you worry, we are going to have a sled is going to be available and you can go on the sled. So we kept being told this. And by that, as we went on, we were getting more and more people. A couple were wounded in the arm and so forth and so on. I don't really know on what reason they were making the same trip.
Were you going over mountain tracks still, or
absolutely,
over roads?
Absolutely, totally mountainous
roads.
Not roads, mountainous
tracks.
Territory.
Yes.
I can't remember a particular road at this early stage. And there were long distances. And during over a period of days, of these people, the girl was wounded in the leg, but, I mean, she was an inspiration. If she could make it, I could bloody well make it, and she's wounded and I'm not.
Yes.
But three of these people just refused to move. And there's nothing that myself or she could do. I mean, we dragged them up. I mean, not all three at once, but on different occasions. So, and we just couldn't carry them ourselves. There's no way we could do it at all. And so they just flopped into the snow and obviously died. And that happened, not the third. The third person was all right. And it happened to one of the others.
These two chaps who flopped out, were they wounded, did you say?
No, the two wounded in an arm, that's five, wasn't it, dear? In the arm, no, they went on.
They kept going?
Kept going. Anyway, then after another relay, we picked up some more people, so we were back again to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And eventually we found this sledge, true enough. But the trouble was with the sledge was that although it had a... What did it have on it? The trouble is that we had to hold it back going down the hill and we had to push it up the bloody hill.
Yes.
This miles of sledge.
Sounds more of an encumbrance than an asset.
More of an encumbrance. Anyway, this was quite a hellish time travelling of all this distance. But then we eventually got close to Cessna or wherever it was to this girl's house, and as in those, they have the stove that comes into the room. So I had a most comfortable night on top of this stove, and you know, milk and potatoes and bread and this, that, and the other for a meal. But about 4 o'clock in the morning, I suddenly thought, I just got to go on. I'm at the end of my tether.
You're saying that you felt you'd got to go on because you were getting towards the end of your strength, I think.
Yes, and so that a couple of things. So I got up and she said I was, you know, quite stupid to go on. And it was sort of 15 miles or something to the main or the next main area. And this time we're amongst roads and really in the control of partisan area. And I started walking at this, but I get weaker and weaker. And some of the times I remember I was on my hands and knees walking. And again, having seen what happened to the other chaps, I was determined not to go to sleep or sit down. I just had to keep going. So I arrived at this place.
How did you know where to go?
Well, I was given the direction. I mean, the road went straight to this place. There was no question of, you know, complicated turns off or so.
A straightforward route.
A straightforward route. And this is a level road. I mean, it's the first time I'd been out of the mountains for I don't know how long. And I stopped and asked somebody who, their Italian wasn't, but I talked about army. And luckily, it wasn't very far further down the road, which was a sort of a veranda-type place. And I go in there, and there is a desk, and there are people in partisan uniforms in there, all looking very efficient and organized. And I talk to him, and so-and-so. He said, have you got any papers? And I said, no. I was only trying to get out of the country, so I had... The only paper I got when I was enlisted with the Partisan 10 Corps, the Partisan group, and they provided me with a bit of paper, which is quite useful. While I was there, I heard this, what sounded like a jeep. And I said, oh, that's it. So anyway, I got up from the chair and walked to the door, and there was a jeep with an army corporal in it, in uniform.
British Army.
British Army corporal in it. And he said, who are you? And He said, oh, Christ, we better move bloody quickly. And he went into the office. He spoke Yugoslav. And they issued a pass. And he'd get in there and he drove like a maniac. And I said, what's on? He said, there's a plane. The first plane is coming in for the first time. You know, we may be lucky and you can get on it. So we drove over these snow on the roads, of course, and everything. But he did it very well. And he dropped me at this airfield where there were lots of people sitting around the perimeter, mostly wounded people. And said, "I'm sorry, I've got to go." And off he shot, you see. So I thought, I just can't believe this. And of course I waited there, is it going to come? And then we heard the plane in the air. And sure enough, it landed.
Was this in daylight?
In daylight. Landed
in daylight. What sort of aircraft was it?
It was a Dakota.
A Dakota?
Yes.
So it must have been a fairly large airfield.
Well, it was a large space.
A strip?
A strip, a large strip, certainly. I mean, it covered in snow.
Yes.
So that, I mean, I couldn't see really what it was there. But there were some buildings, I take it was a... And during there, there was a bloke I met, another British officer, who wasn't in uniform. He was in civilian clothes like myself, called Major Roberts. And anyway, this plane came down, and a number of people came out, and we carried all the wounded into the plane, which had no seats in it at all. It just and I thought, well, how bloody lucky, if I'd stayed at that house,
you'd never have got onto the plane.
I'd never have got on the plane. I mean, life is odd that way, isn't it? I don't know what instinct made me do it. So anyway, we loaded these people on and then got into the plane. This all took less than probably half an hour at the most, because they're all panicking to get off again.
Was there anyone controlling this process in the air crew?
No, there were people just shouting. There was nobody, you know, just loading people. I mean, people weren't sort of giving instructions as such. We just carried the people on, or those that could walk got on. And I sat next to this major. He was a shortest chap, no more than about 5'5", 6" or something. But he, obviously, during this plane trip, we had a most interesting conversation. He spoke every language in the sun to start with. He was at Beaumont College, and he was, been dropped in France, and he'd been dropped in Poland, and he'd been dropped there, and he'd made his way across the so-and-so. Obviously, as he said, well, luckily, because I'm so insignificant, nobody takes much notice of me, so that I can get about. But he obviously had a most fascinating war with various units all over the place.
Was he with SOE at that time?
Yes, as far as I know. But anyway, while we were talking, I said, that sounds very interesting. He said, well, would you be interested in joining us? And I said, well, at this particular moment, I want a bloody good meal and a bath more than anything. He said, well, sir. Anyway, he gave me a name at the War Office. And he said, they're all very secretive there, says, but you, not only you mentioned it, and also, I can't remember, he said, use the word panther or something, and, you know, you, my other pet name, or so, I can't remember. Anyway, so I remembered this. So when we got off the other side, he quickly, very quickly disappeared, because he got passes and things, and knew where he was. But I was arrested. I was wandering around.
Where was this? Where did you land?
Rimini.
You landed in Rimini, so...
I don't mean Rimini, do I mean place down the south? Yes, Rimini, isn't it?
Well, Rimini's on the Adriatic coast.
Yes, Rimini, Riccione.
Yes.
Rimini. Yeah. Hmm. I could see a tea tent somewhere, so I didn't want to declare myself, particularly at that stage. I was chuffed at being there anyway. I always looked extremely scruffy and, what's the name, still with a beard on. So I went into, I got a little tent and had a couple of cups of tea. In the meantime, the other people were all loaded. So I was wondering about sort of thinking, well, I wonder what I should do now. When a British military police said, who are you? And so he said, well, you know, have you got a pass? And, I came in by that plane. Well, how do we know? You know, what's your papers? And this, that, and the other. So I was anyway arrested by him. And take it as a so-and-so, but after a very short space of time, they said, oh, yeah, that's fine, so-and-so. We'll get transport for you to take you to arrest camp and issue with new clothes and everything else. And so I got to this particular camp, which wasn't not many people in it, but the shave and the shower, I just couldn't get out of. It was absolutely unbelievable.
Was this still near Rimini?
yes, this was very close to Rimini itself. Well, I mean, I can't tell you now where the airport was, but it was virtually The rest camp was in Rimini itself, in walking distance of the town. I, having cleaned myself up and really felt gorgeous, went back to put my clothes on, decided to have another quick shower, and came out again. I was told I could get some food, and I had a beef stew of some particular time, bread and...
Had they issued you with fresh clothing?
They issued with me fresh clothing, so very quickly.
You were back in uniform?
Well, yes, well, I was back in uniform this time. Mm. Not terribly well-fitting, but... and I then graduated to the bar, where I met a Russian, who was apparently a Russian major. He was in British uniform, and he had been taken prisoner in, I think, Poland. Again, a very spoke fluent English. And I said, what are you going to do now? He said, well, I'd not go home, because if I go home, I'll get shot. Because the order was nobody's going to surrender. So it wasn't me who surrendered, but the general surrendered. And but he was lucky to escape. But he said that at one stage people were lined up. He wasn't, because he was an officer, and there was some particular reason why he wasn't. And say, will you join the German army? No. Bang. Will you join the Germany? No. Bang. They were shot in the head while they were queuing up, dragged away, apparently. So he said, even a Russian, after 10 people being shot, realised there was no future in this. So they all said yes. So that's how the Cossack units were formed. As I mentioned to you, the sergeant, Russian sergeant, the German sergeant, was an actual Russian who took me prisoner, so that there were a lot of Russians in the German army. But he said, if I go back, it's not it, so I hope they won't do this. There was great controversy over this, as you know.
The return of prisoners of war.
Yeah. Anyway, I decided to go into town. I'd been issued, I don't know where I'd got the money, I issued with quite a reasonable sum of money.
Your pay must have been accumulating quite well while you'd been away.
Yes, but so I don't know quite how that, but I mean, I was certainly not short of money at that stage. And had a tremendous time. I met some other people from the camp in one or two of these bars. One bloke came back with me. He came violently in, so I hung him over a U-shaped tree so he could, and got back into the bar when a rather sort of elegant naval officer was there. And he said, this place is dull. I said, what do you mean? There's plenty of life in Rimini. He said, oh, I don't think. I said, well, let's go out and have it. So we went out for another session. This is a story I don't really like to tell, depravity and all these things. So we go out and have a bar, and he said, well, you come back to my ship for a decent drink. And his ship is moored to the side of the quay. The tide is in then, so it's quite almost level with the jetty. So we go into this, get down the small iron ladder, drop on the deck and take a step forward and fall through the hatch, which was quite a distance. And luckily land sort of almost on my backside. And there's this fellow sitting in a bunk just there, and he said, dropped in for a drink. So I said, you could put it that way. So we then went on this naval run, which I can't remember too much about, but I've got to get back. So then we went back, but the tide had gone out. So there's a bit of gap.
Between the jetty and the deck.
Between the jetty and the deck, and also between the boat and the first rung of the ladder. It's just out of reach. And everybody is a bit hilarious at this stage. So they lift me up, but I fall forward. But they still get hold of my feet, thank goodness. And the boat is going like that, so they just drag me out before it comes in again.
Yes.
So I eventually get up this iron rope, take about four paces, and 4.